Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, dear saints of God. Good afternoon, and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with the one and only Sister Marie. Well, she's already in studio. We are set to go. Just have to make a few announcements. First and foremost, if you are in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. Also, if you are interested in studying the Bible and using those studies to serve people in the church, we have a Bible Institute that is for you. It's called the International Institute of Biblical and Ministerial Studies, and we are just about ready to begin a new cycle. We're gathering a new crop of students. I'm finishing up with the old students, and we're starting to get ready for a new crop of students. If you are interested in joining up with the school, it's free. The school is free. That's right. It's free. There's no registration fee. There is no tuition fee. We don't sell you textbooks, nothing like that. If you want to sign up, just email us at iibms2020@gmail.com, iibms2020@gmail.com. This is for January. We're already starting to recruit for January 2022. So, without any further ado, can't wait to get into today's show. It's going to be fantastic. My dear sister, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and you?
I'm doing well. So looking forward to today's broadcast. And
yes,
we have beautiful, beautiful weather here today. Gorgeous, gorgeous weather. And
good for you.
How's the weather by you? Is it ugly over there? Is it ugly by you?
It's cloudy and cold.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's your weather tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. It's chilly here. You know, it is cold,
right. But
it's very sunny. And it's just a beautiful fall day. It's just a beautiful, beautiful fall day. So, but that's between you and me, because if I start saying that loud in the house, then they're going to put a rake in my hand and say, there's something for you to do outside. So,
yes, exactly.
So that's, I only say that when I'm on the air. Plus, I have 2 weeks
where
I can't do anything.
Here we go.
Because the doctor said that, you know, when you had the kind of procedure I had and they give you the anesthesia where they knock you out, that stuff lingers for a long time. So I have two weeks where I really can't handle anything. I'm not supposed to handle any kind of machinery, you know. So, I don't want to break any dishes. You know, I could be doing a dish, and if I faint, that dish is going to hit the ground, crack. It's going to ruin the set. It's going to ruin the set. So I just have to relax, and this week, I have one more week to go, so let's see what happens.
Yeah.
But
I've heard all this before.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, you want me to have the procedure? These are the repercussions. That's, you know.
Yes, exactly. 2 weeks off.
That's it.
Good
it.
Behavior.
So,
yeah.
Right. And listen,
I'm surprised she got you in there.
She
got you in there without you screaming down the hall. I mean, come on.
Well, listen.
I give her a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I was screaming. Let me tell you, I was screaming.
I'll bet.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. So,
okay.
Well, we have a great show today.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's always good when Sister Marie's on. Please.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You guys do a great job. You guys do a great, great job. You guys do a great job. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we work on it. I mean, we really pray about it and do a lot of research. So, you know, So that's all we can do, you know,
right.
Pray and research and listen to what the Lord wants us to do. That, you know, that's it.
Sure.
So,
and, you know, and that series that you just finished up on critical race theory, right? Let's think about the impact of that series in the state of Virginia, where the Democratic guy running for governor was supposed to win in a landslide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was rejected because he was pushing critical race theory.
Right.
Right? In the
right.
schools.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
he told the parents, you guys don't have a say in what we teach your kids.
Yeah.
Right? And what were the schools pushing? Critical race theory, cultural Marxism, right? That's what they were pushing.
Right.
And the guy lost. He lost.
Yeah. That's right.
So people are pushing back. People get educated
yes.
on this stuff, and then they push back and they say, we don't want this garbage.
That's right.
So
that's
it's encouraging.
It's
it should be encouraging to you and to all the others who do this kind of stuff that, hey, listen, people, they will listen. People will fight back once
yeah.
they are informed of what this garbage that they're pushing on our kids really is. And
right.
it was an encouraging night because, you know, we look at things and this, they look so bad. But then every now and then the people shock us because the people say, no, we're going to push back. You know, people
That's
who
right.
we think are sleepwalking through life, some of them are awake and they're making noise and they're saying no. No to this and no
yeah.
to that. And the guy also, the guy in New Jersey, he held on to power, but very barely. I mean, that election is still a toss-up in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But in
yes.
Virginia, are you kidding me? Virginia, to sweep all
mm-hmm.
to sweep all of the big positions in that state? That was a
yep.
big pushback on critical race theory. So congratulations
yep.
to all you critical race theory warriors. You know, if there's
yes.
weather warriors, why can't there be critical race theory warriors?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, we separate church and state sometimes. But, I mean, when we're looking at what is going to happen to our children, our grandchildren, whatever, there's people who are actually getting in there where they need to be in positions.
Right.
Because this, everywhere we look, the left has, or this agenda has taken over every aspect of society. So,
right.
you know, when you see that, you decide, okay, maybe I'll, you know, run for the school board. Maybe I'll do this. And you think there's no hope because they're constantly pushing the narrative that there's no hope, that everyone is going along with us, and they're not. If
right.
you would see the marches that get, like in London, for example, the biggest march against this happened in the streets of London.
Wow.
And, you know, it was incredible. There was no media attention on it, none.
Right.
It's
right.
YouTubers that are putting out, you know, the truth in a lot of ways.
Right.
Some are scam artists, but they're putting out the truth. And you can't, the pictures don't lie,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you know people over there.
Right.
You know what's like. But, yeah, it gets, you know, the thing that gets the attention is, you know, the thing about the vaccines or,
mm-hmm.
You know, the cases, the hospitals, you know, things like that. That's the agenda being pushed. So, yeah, people don't understand. They think, you know, well, what can I do? I'm only one person. What, you know, no, you're not. I mean, there's literally hundreds of thousands of people, if not more, that are pushing against this, but you'll not hear about it unless you really
right,
research,
right.
you know.
Right.
So.
Or if you're there, if you're in the march, right? You'll see
mm-hmm.
the million people that are there standing alongside
yes.
you. You know.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing is this. Me personally, I wouldn't go. Now, this is just me. I know that there are other people who have a difference of opinion, and that's fine. But in this country,
mm-hmm.
right, if you
mm-hmm.
go to one of these marches, the FBI
yeah.
is going to be knocking on your door. What were you doing
that's
there?
That's right.
What was your participation?
That's
you know,
right.
And so this is why I stay away from those, because look at all the trouble that these other people have gotten into just to go to that January 6th thing, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's about labeling people right now
right.
In certain groups. Now that we found out, you know, you just, they're trying to label you if you do anything
yeah.
positive or object to any of this agenda. You're labeled as something you're not. Now, we need to remember that Jesus was accused of things he didn't do.
Right.
So do we expect that we would not be accused, you know, of things we didn't do or feel? You know, no, we're going to
sure.
get that same treatment. So, yeah, you know, if they can get a picture of you marching in something, they can, you know, point the finger.
Forget it.
Yeah,
forget
you're done.
It. What were you doing there?
You're labeled.
Did you fund this thing? Did you financially support it? And then they called in the IRS and they're looking at your accounts and, you know,
mm-hmm.
this gets ugly. It gets really, really
you
ugly.
Know, I saw something I was watching on YouTube. There was a scam artist come out on the heels of a death of a little girl or supposed death. I don't know. You know, we don't have any idea what happened to this little girl after all these months. But, you know, the scam artists come out of the woodwork. And, you know, fundraisers and things like that
sure.
are a scam. And you
yeah.
wonder, where is law enforcement in this? Because if you are accused of anything, like, you know, you march into something, which I object to, too. But if you do that, you can be labeled. But yet you have open scams going on. And thankfully, people are turning them into, you know, the FBI and stuff, these scams
yeah.
on the Internet.
Yeah.
But part of that, too, is when a person objects, and we're going back to BLM, when a person objected to the scam and saying, wait a minute, this is a pyramid scam, and they've inserted themselves into this group, you know,
right.
that are trying to find this child, and they're scamming.
Mm-hmm.
They're being called racist because they're mentioning that this person is taking or scamming hundreds of thousands of dollars, you
right.
know. So they just shut down. They're shutting down, you know, the people from speaking against these things by using labels, you know.
Right.
So, and we all, no one wants anyone to be scammed, and things should be turned over, you know. Fraud
mm-hmm.
should be
right.
turned over.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it's amazing. It's going on everywhere, in everything. So.
Yep.
You know, I think that was important because people are saying, I don't care what they say. You know, this is hurting a lot of people, and I'm going to say something. Now, silly
mm-hmm.
marching and stuff, and, you know, no, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, okay. So today, on this show, we're going to get to the heart of the issue, known as, in this time, as wokeness or the social
okay.
justice movement,
mm-hmm.
social justice gospel. This
right.
includes dominionism, the Seven Mountain Mandates, Black liberation theology, the purpose-driven life, identity politics, or simply the left's theology. Now, all these things are wrapped into one. You have to believe that. You have to understand that everything that totally separate, they're all intertwined together. It's just different areas coming in, but they all have the same belief system behind it. So the correct name for this infiltration of society and the church is cultural Marxism, wokeness, and Leninism. Census, I think, because the agenda is right before us right now, I mean, we can clearly see it. There's no arguing against this at all. So, but sometimes it's important to understand where this mindset originated. So before I continue,
right.
Do you agree with any of this, or before I
absolutely
do my
absolutely
opening?
Yeah. And
history
you
is
know,
so important.
Yeah, history, and also, you know, being able to connect the dots, right? I mean, when you see something,
mm-hmm,
like when we do a show here, and you listen to the show, and then when you actually go to work or you go to church or you go, and then you see the wokeness, you have to be
mm-hmm
able to say, okay, that's what the show was talking about. This is what the show was warning
it
me about, right? You have to be able to connect the dots for yourself, because we're not there with you. You know, we've
mm-hmm
already connected the dots for you in the show. Now you have to ask the Holy Spirit to give you discernment to connect the dots in the place where you're at.
Yes, exactly. So there's something here. If we go back in the very beginning, we did Alice Bailey. And there was a reason the Lord had us do that. Because you really don't have to look too far to see what's going on with this.
Right.
Alice Bailey had a 10-point strategy for a new world order. And let's go through the 10. And I think at this point, the 10, the strategy, you know, all these criterias and different things for this strategy have already been met. But
mm-hmm
let's go over it again. We take God and prayer out of the education system. Now, have we done that? Yes.
Yep.
We took God and prayer out. Reduce parental authority over children. That's number two. Have
mm-hmm
we done that?
Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Three, destroy the traditional Christian family structure.
Yep.
Yes. Four, if sex is free, make abortion legal and easy. Have we done that?
Yep, absolutely.
Five, make divorce easy and legal. Free people from the concept of marriage for life. Have we done that? Yes.
Yep.
Make homosexuality alternative lifestyle.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Debase art, make it run mad.
Yes. Absolutely.
Use media.
Just stop there for a minute. You know, you go to all these places and they have art on the wall and you're saying, my goodness, I did that in kindergarten. I did that painting there. My grandson did that. You know, this is garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, please.
Stick men.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's an awkward position.
It's like Joe Biden's son, right? Joe Biden's son, he's selling art pieces of paint for $1 million. It's garbage.
Oh, geez. Yeah, garbage.
It's garbage.
Hunter's
an artist now.
Everybody's got a label now.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a title.
Exactly.
We got a label, but we also have a title. Everyone does.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Okay. Use media to promote and change mindset.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yep.
Create an interfaith movement. Do we see
absolutely
that happening?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The last thing she said, now let's remind everyone This was back in what, the 1800s, 1900s. I think she was born in 1800s. I forget. The early 1900s. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Get governments, number 10, get governments to make all these laws, wait, get governments to make all these law, all these changes law, and get the church to endorse these changes. Are we a number 10 or are we not a number 10? We're
yeah.
at number 10. Look at
sure.
the SBC.
Right.
SBC.
Sure. Sure.
So, do you see why at the very beginning, bro, six years ago, this
mm-hmm.
is where we started. This is exactly where we started. And so it's been on the right path the whole time. And I'm
right.
so thankful for that, because that I had no idea why we started with Alice Bailey, and I certainly do now, because this is exactly what's happening. And if you
right.
understand what she believes spiritually, she's a Luciferianism and other things. She brings all these different mixtures together, these different beliefs. You saw that in the book.
Right, right, right.
I did an audio on that.
Yeah.
What she has in London, that's in London. Her book's in there, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
She does a mixture, and that's what they're doing now. She believed everything was, you know, she was creating an interfaith movement with all these different religions through
yeah.
her books. And some of it's, most of it's really sick. Now,
mm-hmm.
that was a doctrine of demons.
Right.
Remember, she had someone she listened to, a demon she listened to, right?
Right.
Buddhic. Was it Buddhic or Tibetan? A Tibetan.
I don't remember. I know she listened to some demon. Yeah.
That she couldn't see, spirit. She
mm-hmm.
could describe him, but he wasn't, you know, what she could see face to face.
Right.
That, if I remember correctly about her. So that's where we started, and this is where we're at. We're at 10. So.
Mm-hmm.
Those things were not fulfilled, all of them, especially the media one. I think it was starting, but it wasn't full blown when we started, you know. So it just shows you where we're, where, you know, how we move forward with
well,
it,
you know. Yeah, the Bible says that a little leaven leavens the whole lump, but it doesn't
yep.
leaven it immediately. It takes a while for things to get leavened.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, it takes
that's
a while
right.
for that leaven to go. It's like gangrene. You know, someone gets gangrene in a toe, and the doctor says, you better
mm-hmm.
cut off the toe. The patient says, no, I want to hold on to my toe. Then now there's gangrene in the ankle. The doctor says, you better cut off your ankle. No, I want to keep my ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's gangrene up to the knee. See,
yeah.
it keeps spreading.
Yes.
So.
Yep.
And for some people, especially in the church, the gangrene starts in the brain. You know. but
it works its way down.
Yeah. But it starts somewhere. It definitely
gravity.
Starts somewhere. Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So.
Yep.
Anyway, this audio was done by the New Discourses podcast, and the speaker is James Lindsay. Mr. Lindsay is not a Christian. I'll tell you that right
okay.
now. However, he is an intellectual man, and he does a
right.
wonderful job explaining the origins of movements and agendas that we see today. I mean, he's an excellent teacher on this.
Right.
So a brief audio description in part is this. If you want to understand the present movement, especially how similar wokeness seems to Mayo's Cultural Revolution, you need to understand the Italian communist Antonio Gramsci. Now, we've talked about him before, and that's right.
right.
He's involved in, he's a big part of this. Gramsci wrote a series of essays and books while imprisoned by the Italian fascists in the 1920s and 1930s. they were referred to as the prison notebooks. We've talked about that before. These are the birthplace of cultural Marxism. That's exactly, he's correct in this. This is where cultural Marxism started. So Mr. Lindsay here argues that cultural Marxism has morphed into identity Marxism ever since. And I think he's correct. So once you understand Gramsci, you can easily understand what is going on in our present society and understand more clearly than ever why we need to resist this. This is, you know, once you understand this, you'll understand why you need to move away from it, you know, as far as you can. And possibly, you know, resist, and we're not talking about force. It's just not going along with a lot of things we're putting out there. Because once you go along with it, they have you. So the audio today, and this was uploaded in January 2021, the audio is Antonio Gramsci, Cultural Marxism, Wokeness, and Leninism 4.0. Now you have Leninism 1.0, whatever. We're at 4.0 in the Leninism. So it's quite interesting. So you can stop it as you like, and it's 57 minutes, I think. We'll not get 57:34. This is going to be two shows. It'll probably be two shows. Or it could be three with us. Who knows?
Right.
But whatever. But, you know, there's a lot that we need to talk about in this. And I think, you know, really pay attention to what he's saying, because you can see this all around us.
Sounds good. Here we go.
Okay.
Antonio Gramsci, Cultural Marxism, Wokeness, and Leninism 4.0.
Yep.
You are listening to the New Discourses podcast, and today I want to tell you about a person.
How does that volume sound? Does it sound good?
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, he's got a really smooth voice.
Okay.
His name is Antonio Gramsci. Antonio Gramsci is a very important character. In fact, he's probably the linchpin between historical Marx and present-day everything on the left that's gone out of control anyway, present-day leftism. Antonio Gramsci, I don't really have, by the way, super detailed notes about this, but I just kind of want to give you a picture of how important this guy is. He was an Italian Marxist. He was jailed in the 1920s, 1926 specifically, by the Italian fascists. Most people don't realize, given how brutally fascistic communist regimes turn out to be, but the communists and the fascists in the 1920s and 1930s were not quite on the same side. When they jailed him, they said that they needed to silence his mind for 20 years. Gramsci, if you've been following some of my other stuff I've been working on, you'll not be terribly surprised to find out was not in great health. He was ravaged by disease. It left him deformed, very sickly, very bad health problems, had a hard time being able to fit into an industrial society, very linguistically skilled. So here we have a misfit who was linguistically skilled, who was an ardent communist. What a shock. But anyway, when he was in prison, they didn't manage to silence his mind. He wrote copiously. Between 1929 and 1935. He died shortly thereafter, and there's a collection of things he wrote. It has been published. It is referred to as his prison notebooks. They were in Italian, obviously. They were known to the critical theorists in the Frankfurt School. It's likely they would have been known. I don't know for sure, but it's probable that they were known to the French postmodernists. They were not, however, translated into English until 1970. They were translated at Notre Dame by a translating group led by Joseph Buttigieg, who is the father of Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Wow.
I knew the stop was going to be there.
Wow.
Does that
wow.
tell you anything?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Absolutely.
Yep, you're going to hear some last names that sound familiar today.
Yeah.
So you think about it. Now you know the history of who you're voting for, you know.
Sure, sure.
who's out
sure.
there today. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Amazing.
Indeed.
Which is an interesting little connection. So one of Gramsci's lines, just to kind of contextualize how he thought about this, was that socialism, this is a quote, socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. So Gramsci is often credited as the guy who's the Long March to the Institutions guy, even though he's not the one who called it that. He is the one, however, who should be credited with the development of cultural Marxism. Of course, Lukács and the early guys in the Frankfurt School were also poking at cultural issues, but they were much more interested in Freudian psychoanalysis and Weber's sociology, trying to apply that to Marx. Gramsci was the one who really understood, and this is his idea, the cultural hegemony idea. It was his key pillar that holds up the capitalist society for Gramsci is cultural hegemony. Cultural hegemony is kind of like this feeling, like you have to go along with the culture. In fact, there's a lot of pressure that you have to conform to the culture. And so Gramsci's claim, being Marxist, was that the elites, the bourgeoisie in society, created intentionally ideologies and the dominant culture to keep people trapped in their way of thinking, way of approaching the world. In other words, to keep them upholding capitalism. That's the source of the false consciousness that became prominent in the Frankfurt School critical theory analysis that people have. So Gramsci is a major, major figure. He had some other big ideas. He was huge on the idea that there are certain pillars of culture that have to be taken on: religion, family, education, media, law. So he was very, very clear in his belief that those are the places, these sites of cultural production, where something has to happen, where there has to be this critique, there has to be this, you have to tear those things down in order to make way for the revolution if you're going to have it in Western democracies, which are not working out well for communist revolutions in the 1920s. In fact, that was the big question of the era for the Marxists. Why isn't Marxism taking? He was also big on creating this idea that the working class needed its own culture, and they needed their own intellectuals, working class education. This is what led directly, and I mean in a very straight line, both in the Brazilian context under Paulo Freire and in the American context under people like Michael Apple leading into Henry Giroux, who also discovered Freire later, to critical pedagogy, so taking over our education system with Marxist ideology can be traced back very directly to Antonio Gramsci. He had this idea that society is split between the political society and the civil society. He was a big fan of historicism. We'll talk about that a bit, but that's basically kind of the way that Hegel and Marx saw history unfolding through the action of activists, really. He was against Marx's later ideas, like in Das Kapital, of what he referred to as economism. He didn't believe that it was an inevitability, for example, that the working class would become conscious by just the machinations of capitalism, as Marx had posited in Das Kapital. He believed instead that there would have to be agitation, and in fact, he believed in a two-phase revolution, which we're kind of seeing right now, where there's a cultural revolution paired with a kind of a hard revolution in the classical sense, after the cultural revolution has weakened the culture enough to allow it. So you can kind of see Gramsci's relevance right now. We are going through, China went through a cultural revolution, and then Mao was able to come in and seize power and establish the CCP. We are going through a cultural revolution right now, and the political power will follow that. So Gramsci's often credited with this idea that politics is downstream from culture. And as I said a moment ago, you can tell he also understood that culture is downstream from education. So he was very interested in those things. He also had some negative thoughts on objectivity. He was actually anti-objective, and that he was a very strict historicist. So he thought that everything was contextual to the time and, I guess, place in which it arose. So his biggest influence, I am going to continue to talk more and more about the influence of Hegel and his phenomenology of spirit. So the early Hegel, the so-called young Hegel, especially on the young Marx, which differs from the old Marx, as maybe you picked up a little bit from what I've just said. Well, Gramsci's, one of his chief influences was another Italian thinker, perhaps one of the most famous and influential Italian thinkers of the time, Antonio Lobroia. Lobroia, let me pronounce that correctly. Another thinker, Benedetto Croce. These guys were especially, Croce was particularly an idealist, an Italian idealist. So he was influenced in the same kind of milieu that you would see Hegelian and even Kantian thought. Lobroia was very much a young Hegelian. He was an outright Hegelian Marxist. And so these thoughts, as transmitted largely through Gramsci, were incredibly influential on a much more famous name, Leon Trotsky, and the Trotskyist style or Trotskyite style approach to socialism. Gramsci was enamored with Lenin, and he actually kind of had a whole falling out with various people when he tried to indicate how Stalin had kind of deviated from Lenin, but it was a complicated critique, because he largely agreed with what Stalin was doing, but thought that Stalin was going too far, which is obviously correct. And so, in a sense, you could say that Gramsci was a Leninist-style person. In other words, he believed, in particular, and this is, I guess, a starting point for kind of his historical background. He was watching. He believed, in particular, that a Leninist-style approach was going to be necessary. In other words, there was going to be the need to form a communist party out of intellectual elites, very much like Lenin advocated. If you don't understand Leninism, we may have to take a short sidebar into that. But what Gramsci saw was that the Italian workers' parties were not forming a nice, powerful political bloc like Marx would have predicted. And Lenin was providing the answer to that, or had provided an answer to that, in the form of his party-style or communist party-style approach. And so, just as a very short aside, in kind of very broad strokes, Leninism is this idea that the proletariat are not going to wake up for themselves, so they need this group of elites, technically people within the bourgeoisie, so rich people who have lots of spare time and lots of angst against the society, that are going to then become deep into the ideology of Marxism, and then they will shepherd the proletariat through the revolution. So you can see this is where the party, that Orwell talks about the party as, in terms of the Soviets, the party in terms of the CCP in China, that's where all this comes from. There's this idea that these people have to appoint themselves as the revolutionary leaders, and every time these people just march societies into the blender, because it doesn't work. As I've written elsewhere and talked about elsewhere, they are constructing a pseudo-reality. Marxism has some interesting critiques of society and capitalism, has some interesting development of some of Hegel's ideas, it has some interesting views of its own, but it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's not compatible with human nature. It's not compatible with the way that we actually allocate resources. If you talk about it in a material economic sense, it has to be forced on people, and it gets forced on people by these parties. This is Leninism. And it gets forced on people by these parties who are elite enough to understand the rarefied air of Marxist theory, and then will shepherd the proletariat through the revolution, which in practice means shipping them off to gulags or killing fields, or letting half of the population of China starve, or whatever it is. It never works out, because it's all based in poppycock. It's pseudo-reality. It is a pseudo-real description that misunderstands all of the fundamental premises of how societies are organized. So Graham...
Let's stop it there for a moment, and let's think about Black Lives Matters, right? How they don't live in a reality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't live in a reality. They just had an election in Minnesota, right? And that's the George Floyd Minneapolis, right? That's where George Floyd was killed. And they were promoting, eliminate the cops, eliminate police departments, reduce the. So they took it to a vote, and the people said, "No, you're not taking away our police department. That's not reality."
Yes.
If you take away our police department, we have crime now as it is with a police department. Can you eliminate? Can you imagine what life would be like if you defunded the police? You can't defund, right? And so like he was saying, these people who come up with these so-called grand ideas and who want to lead the rest of us, and they want to do things that would just destroy society.
Yeah.
Because you can't defund the police. You know, if defund the police. Let me give you an example. In New York City, right? In New York City, they don't arrest people. If you shoplift in New York City, you don't get arrested. So what do you think happened to shoplifting? It's sky high.
Yeah.
Shoplifting is sky high. Why? Because let's say if the store owner grabs you and catches you, guess what? The police say, okay, did he put the stuff back? Yeah, okay, let him go. But most times, the store owner doesn't catch the shoplifter. Right? So he's losing.
Yes.
And so, if I'm not going to get arrested, if I don't get to spend a night in Rikers Island, if I don't get a police record, I'm going to keep shoplifting. Well, keep eliminating those laws, and guess what happens? You're going to have lawlessness.
Yes, and it takes down the business. Can't afford that either. So it takes the business down.
Sure.
You see?
That's
why they're letting this happen.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, this is insane. No, they don't live in a reality. It's not real. It's just Nancy Pelosi, defund the police, but yet she's surrounded by bodyguards.
Yes.
It's easy for you to say, lady.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's not her reality.
That's right.
She's the Speaker of the House. I mean, she's got bodyguards on top of bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
Yeah, they don't live what they preach, you see, even in society. They're not living what they're preaching.
Right.
I think I saw an article where someone wanted to defund the police department and then called the police because she was extremely upset over an Uber driver. You know, the way he spoke to her, she thought she was disrespected and called the police. This is how ridiculous this is. But, we noticed in that he said it was translated into English in 1970, and we know by who now, so we know what that agenda is. And another thing he said was in the when he talked about going along with the culture, we see that right now. You feel you're being pressed to go along with society. You're constantly pushed to get along and all feel the same way. That's that hegemony. You know, that's exactly what that is. And that's what we see going on right now. Society is pulling you. And I remember years ago in the talking to you, and I said in the church, you know, the church I was attending was pushing that everyone be involved in the community, helping the community constantly. And this was a part of that. This is where it started. It's great to help a community, you know. I mean, if they need help. But it was pushed on them to do things constantly. Work for the community. Work for the community. And I can remember complaining about that. You know, people have family. They have their home. And yet they were having people go out on the weekend and pick up trash in the parks. You know, what happened to parks workers? You know, out water in parades, things like that. So that's a part of what how it started, you know.
Right.
So another thing is the pillars of culture that have to be taken down. We see that. And then we look at, remember what I just read with Alice Bailey, the religion, family, education, media. This is all that Seven Mountain Mandate, by the way.
Sure.
That's not, this is not a mandate that the church is to overcome. When Walnow come in, the Lance Walnow, and introduce the Seven Mountain Mandate, that's not, and he said the church needs to be at the top of the pyramid to conquer all these things. No, no, no. They're a part of that church. They're Marxists. And they want to be at the top of those things. And they're using you to help conquer these things in society. So that's how they infiltrated within the church. And it was through the Seven Mountain Mandate.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you look, the Marxist mandate, you know, you have a mixture here of Marxism and Leninism. And then they come up with this new entity. You see? And that's what we're seeing today. It's a mixture of these things.
Right.
And so when you see the 7M, and I knew immediately when I saw it, that's Marxism, because it's the same thing. It's the same things they need to conquer. They just said the church needs to do that. That's all that they were saying. And as far as taking over an educational system, Common Core, that has been taught in our schools for years. That's a communist agenda. You know, they're raising a generation, or they're trying to, of Marxist thinkers. So they're tearing down the old to get this, build back better. That's a part of Biden's slogan. You know, political and civil society, you know, they believe in acts of activists, you know. Think about that. So why did BLM go so strong? Because they believed in acts of activists. Why is it that you couldn't, the people were saying, well, why is it we can't have a peaceful protest? But yet you had governors marching in BLM. Well, that's because they believe in activists. They help tear down a society.
Yeah.
He also said there was a two-phase revolution. Cultural revolution, that's a hard revolution. And that's the plan to weaken the culture within the culture. You know.
Right.
And then you have the next revolution. That's where they come in and seize power. And so you have to ask yourself, who is this political power that comes in after this, after they tear things down? Could that be the Antichrist? Very well could be.
Yep.
So your thoughts on that? I mean, if once they have it torn down, you know, what's the next step? Because their next step is seizing power. Who is that person?
Right.
That's going to rule over everything in society or culture. Who is that? That could very well be the Antichrist, the rise of the Antichrist.
Right. See, today, they hate herd immunity, right, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Fauci?
Yeah.
No, there's no herd immunity.
Yes.
Get the shots. No,
yeah.
there
yeah.
is herd immunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more people that get it, it passes around the herd, and then we all become, you know, we all repel it, herd immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So they hate herd.
That's right.
They denounce it. There's no such thing. But they promote herd mentality. They
yep.
all want you to be stupid. See?
Yep.
So they
yeah.
see you see how they flip it? And
yep.
And that's the conditioning that takes place. See? They're conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
They want everyone to fall in line. Everyone. And that's why people are pushing back and saying, no, we don't want this. This is garbage. This doesn't make any sense. How could you defund the
yep.
police? How could you do this? How could you do that? And the people that were most affected by crime voted and said, no, we don't want you to defund the police. So Biden, his head is spinning. You know, in between
yes.
naps, when he's up, his head is spinning because he doesn't know which way to go.
Wakey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh.
So,
well,
all right.
Think about the church right now. You have these intellectual elites in power. You know, well, think about it in the church setting. You have wicked shepherds right now, wicked, who march you right through the revolution. They'll march you right into this. And they, you know, they're
well,
appointing themselves. We heard from Jeff the other day, you know, about this, how these shepherds are marching these people right into this. And, you know, because they think that there's a position in there for them. They think that they're
so
going to
is,
be part of the, you know,
of course,
right down to our local
them.
Government.
Sure, there's a position there for them. Paula White, showed us that there's a position there for
right.
for anyone, and it's called bootlicker. That's the position.
Yeah.
Bootlicker.
Bootlickers.
Right? I mean, that's it. That's
terrible.
I mean, that's the position. So, yeah.
Wokeness
no.
and bootlickers.
That's
what we
it.
Should have named it.
That's it. So, no. You, I mean, you played an audio last week of a pastor saying, hey, if my grandkids
yeah.
want to visit me and they want their
yep.
birthday money and they want their Christmas money, they better get the shot.
Yeah.
Well, you know what,
Black
Grandpa?
Mail.
Yeah, you know what, Grandpa? You can have all of our shots. You can have them all.
Yeah. Grandpa Bootlicker.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
I like that bootlicker.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Those are the positions available. Bootlicking.
Yeah.
Look at all those guys
yeah.
who used to waste their time going over there to the White House to pray for Trump. All those, remember,
yeah.
week after week, they were taking snapshots of them with praying for the president, and he lost.
Yeah.
He lost.
Yeah.
And so what are you doing now? Where are you now? Are you with the president? Are you part of his advisory council now? You bootlicker?
Exactly. Bootlicker. Oh.
I was
the
doing
queen.
The class last night, and my wife says, why are you screaming when you're doing that class? We can hear. I'm not screaming. I'm just teaching. I'm just teaching.
Preaching and fed up. I'm fed up with these people.
Yeah.
You know, though, you think about it, if you think about their end, okay, they think they're going, they're have, these people are living in fear, even these pastors. They're afraid. They know what's going on, several of them, most of them, I would say, in the woke movement. They think
mm-hmm.
they're positioning themselves. But what they, maybe they need to read their Bible because, you know, the Antichrist, they turn. It turns on the harlot. So, you see, there's
sure.
going to be a turning around on the harlot here. And so all these bootlickers, their day's coming. You know, they're
absolutely.
Not going to be treated any better because of what they're doing. What they've done is throw Christ out of their churches, sucked up to these people, these elites, out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
They're leading sheep astray, And in the end here, they're not getting any position. It may be temporary, but guess what? They're going to get turned on too.
Yeah,
so
but you
what
know,
they've done
listen,
is just, you know.
Listen,
go ahead.
For you to be in a position where you have lost your own dignity, because all of those pastors who were meeting with Trump, all of them, they all prayed, they all prophesied, and for what? He lost. He lost. So none of them are any good.
No.
None of them.
No. They thought they were going to get at the top of the pyramid, see?
That's it. And for a little while they were. But again, what happens? And Biden doesn't have anybody meeting with him and praying for him and you know. And so all of that, see.
The Pope is.
Well, yeah, of course.
Well, I have a really good news clip on that, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to play it when we get done with this series.
but the Pope is also asleep. He's another one who's asleep and doesn't know it. So, Okay. Here's more.
Okay.
She, I want to posit is sort of the link between that and now. Okay, so Gramsci becomes extremely relevant in the fact that his prison notebooks in particular link that Leninist-style thought to understanding that there has to be a cultural revolution to make it work. So the only, at the time, we're talking the 1920s, the only communist revolution that had worked was the Bolshevik Revolution with Lenin at the helm in Russia. There was the attempt in Hungary by Georg Lukács that fell apart. Lukács got pissed off about this, went to Germany, founded the Frankfurt School, eventually incorporated many of Gramsci's ideas. But the only communist revolution that had worked all these years after Marx had predicted its inevitability was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. And under Lenin. And so Gramsci figured that something must be going on that's right there. And what he figured out was why aren't these things happening in the West? Why are they not happening in Germany? Why are they not happening in Italy? Why are they not happening in England? Apparently they believed that these were societies, especially England, was apparently supposed to be a society that was ripe, according to Marx's theory of capitalism evolving into socialism naturally. And it just wasn't happening. And Gramsci blamed culture. He said that basically these countries had too strong of culture. They weren't just a bunch of Russian peasants. They were a people who were clear-eyed about who they were, and they had lots of deep cultural roots, and they had very effective institutions for transmitting their cultural roots, and that established what you would call a cultural hegemony that would be characterized as common sense that would then maintain the so-called status quo, in other words, not allow it to become Marxist. For him, culture was the collection of bourgeois values. Their culture meant, especially at the time, it didn't mean necessarily, you hadn't really had the cultural anthropologists coming through and kind of changing the meaning of the word. Culture referred to like art, literature, speaking properly, knowing how to dine, the refined aspects of participating in culture, so they were identified with bourgeois values. And the idea was that these bourgeois values and the promotion of these bourgeois values and the ideologies of the countries like nationalism and so on that uphold these bourgeois values prevent a class consciousness from arising. That was Gramsci's kind of key idea, and he called this cultural hegemony. That's what prevented the so, as Marx predicted, the inevitable proletarian revolutions from taking place. They were not inevitable, Gramsci realized, because culture first had to be dissolved. And so this breaking down of culture became the first and most important project. So now you have this split in communist thought, starting with Gramsci very clearly, where he saw Lenin had done something right, but more importantly, he realized that culture was the roadblock everywhere else, to where now you're going to split into having a two-stage revolution, a cultural revolution that eventually demoralizes the people, and then when that is sufficiently done, then this party can step in and seize power, because the culture is not strong enough and the people who are within that culture are not unified enough to be able to resist the revolution. It's a really nasty but also very effective tactic that, as I've spoken about in other places, liberalism is particularly susceptible to. In fact, liberalism is particularly susceptible to it because liberalism takes everything, every argument as charitably as possible, and therefore it can't conceive of the idea that the goal of the communists is to destroy the thing. It can't conceive of the idea that legitimately psychopathic people are creating pseudo-real descriptions just to manipulate people in order to gain their own power because they think it will lead to a utopian revolution. And I mean that quite literally. You can read Max Horkheimer, his essay, Traditional and Critical Theory, written in 1937. He's one of the kind of cornerstone guys of the Frankfurt School. He explicitly says in the essay that without having a utopian vision, that critical theory just kind of does useless things. It has to be done in service to a utopian vision, and that utopian vision is, of course, for all these people, Marxist, because they were all Marxists. And they had their criticisms of later Marx. This is a fun little trick. So you can say, oh, well, they were against Marxism. They were vicious critics of Marx. They were not against the early Marx, who was basically taking Hegel's ideas, Hegel's religion, frankly, and channeling it into material society in terms of conflict theory between the working class and everybody else. So he held then that...
And that goes back to the squad in Washington, D.C., the AOCs and her female buddies, who they're promising their constituents a utopia, but their goal is to destroy America. They hate America. They hate capitalism. They hate, you know, the American flag. So they're promising, oh, we want to make your life better. We want to do this and we want to do that. And, and give them the sick pay and give them home leave and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And free prescription, free college, free. But when you start giving everything free, nothing is free. Nothing.
Right. Yep.
Right? Nothing's free.
Yep.
Nothing. So,
well, you know, one of the things here is they hate patriotism. If you're a patriot, you know, you got to hate this country, and that's what they're doing right now. So if you have too strong of a culture, which the West was, other places, you know, it was easy to take down. Now, I would say England was rough to take down. If you think of the speeches of Winston Churchill and all that, you know, the patriotism and stuff, it was hard to take down England until they had a generation filled with socialism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was easier to take it down. So what they try to do is to believe they're working, they're moving this way. So now what they're doing right now, America is bad. That's what they're trying to say. You know, this is a bad country. They want you to believe that because that will open the door for them to change it. So the one thing, patriots, you know, what is that? You know, you were proud of your country at one point. So they got to take that down or they can't get in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? They label them with different names, you know?
Right.
And they get the people to believe that these people are really that, you know? If you're a patriot, it's a bad thing now. And why is that? Because they can't take it down as long as you you know, you're a patriot in any way. So this is all the they're using what we called before the fifth column tactics. They're taking
right.
it down from the inside. That's what
mm-hmm.
they're doing. So
sure. Okay, here's more.
Okay.
Having ideological and cultural control of the people is central to being able to achieve the revolution, which would proceed in two stages. First, the culture. Then there would be an attempt made through violence and whatever else to overthrow the existing power structures. Although ideally, you would just be able to infiltrate and the coup would be soft. No need to necessarily get violent. No need to get messy here. You would just fully infiltrate the culture of the existing institutions. You know, those institutions he saw that held up the pillars of culture as he would see it. In other words, the domains of cultural production, where Marx was interested in the domains and seizing the domains of economic production for, he says, the workers and the people. It's BS. We know it's BS. What he really meant was for the party, the elites that are real, like himself, that were going to guide society and rule society. Gramsci understood that you have to seize the means of cultural production. And the places he saw that were most relevant were religion and the churches. So you had to get this ideology into the churches. You had to start dismantling Christianity if it's a Christian-dominant country or culture. You had to start dismantling Judaism. You had to start dismantling even Islam if you wanted to do it there. If you were in China, you would dismantle Confucianism and even some of the Buddhist and Taoist thought, just like Mao did. Just like Mao did. So Mao, you could think of, by the way, as like Lenin 3.0. Stalin would be like Lenin 2.0. And this cultural revolution idea of Gramsci had a lot to do with that. That's how Mao proceeded. So
try to disconnect man from any
mm-hmm.
kind of spirituality.
Yes. Yep.
When you turn away man from spirituality, you turn him into an animal.
That's right.
Right?
That's exactly what we see. Yep.
Yeah, because on a farm, you never see the pigs saying to one another, it's Saturday, let's get ready to go to church tomorrow. You never hear the
mm-hmm.
chickens and the roosters saying, you know, it's Saturday, Let's go to bed early so we can be up early to go to church tomorrow morning. The animals do not think about God or church or worship or fellowship in the sense that we speak of spiritual fellowship. The
mm-hmm.
only one the only group or the only creature on earth that thinks that way is man.
That's right.
It's man. So
you see why Beth Moore, I did that thing on Beth Moore where she was saying, her daughter that made fun of people who go to bed early to get up, you know, to go to church on Sunday.
Right.
You see?
Right.
That's exactly why I did that I had this in mind, you know. This is exactly what she's saying here. What we're seeing here at the moment is the breaking down of culture, values,
sure.
morals. Deep-held beliefs,
mm-hmm.
you know. And in the Bible, that's what the Lord said, that they're calling good evil and evil good. This is exactly
right.
This
mm-hmm.
is exactly what we see here going on. So, you know, right in front of our eyes.
Right in front of our eyes.
Can't miss it.
Yep. Okay, here's more.
You're going to take apart the religion. You're going to get into the churches. We see this now. This woke BS has infiltrated like every one of the major religious institutions. It has infiltrated the Southern Baptist Convention, thanks to myself and a couple of other people. A couple dozen people really fighting back. We have pushed the Southern Baptist Convention to the point where they are now pretending to, and I want to really emphasize that, pretending to repudiate this. We're pretending to repudiate critical race theory and intersectionality. Meanwhile, if you read what their statement was, they're saying, oh, we're against critical race theory and intersectionality, but basically we're just going to keep doing the same thing. We're still going to acknowledge systemic racism. We're still going to acknowledge the history of racism and pretend it has significant relevance today. We're still just going to do all the things that critical race theory would do. We just won't call it that. Very same trick as when Trump issued the executive order that banned lots of divisive teachings that come out of critical race theory. He didn't actually ban critical race theory. If you read the freaking order, it still says in Section 10 that you can teach it. It still says you can have diversity training. But you saw the media go berserk and say he banned diversity training, he banned racial sensitivity training. And then you saw the educators saying, well, we'll just keep doing it under different words. Or we'll just keep doing it. And so the Southern Baptist Convention is doing the same thing. It's making its way into Catholic organizations. I hear from this all the time, especially the more left-leaning ones, but it's in all of them. It's making what this new cardinal is kind of like advancing the ball for them. The Pope, like, don't even get me started on the Pope. The Pope is all in on this stuff. In the Presbyterian Church, I've heard from Buddhists, it's everywhere. This stuff has infiltrated the religions. The religions create an ideal delivery mechanism to evangelize for this while taking away the most important cultural bulwark that we have against adopting it. Since it's so hard with a pluralistic society like the United States, e pluribus unum implies pluralism, it's so hard outside of saying, well, we're Americans and we have this American liberal identity, it's so hard to have clear, obvious, uniting values, but not in the church. It's easy there. So if you can subvert the church, Gramsci understood. Gramsci understood 100 years ago that if you could subvert the church, you could create basically the greatest, you could remove the greatest impediment while creating the greatest delivery mechanism for the ideology possible. And this is what we're seeing. The Southern Baptist Convention is pretending to back away from it. They're not backing away from it, and hopefully the leaders there will stand up and continue to fight. They're right at the edge. They've got the people to say, no, this is wrong, and then but, and then they're just getting taken advantage of. They're being too nice. They're not standing up. They're not standing up and saying, we've got you. We're not doing this. No, no compromise. They're saying, oh, our brothers and sisters, da-da-da, they mean well. And so all the moves are being played. You have people saying, oh, well, if we're going to get rid of critical race theory, we're out. Okay, good, bye. You don't belong here. The point, we don't want people who subvert. This is something everybody needs to understand right now. We don't want people who subvert our organizations as central players in our organizations, and if you don't understand that, you get to kiss your organization goodbye, whether it's a company, whether it's a church, whether it doesn't matter, a university, a school, an institution, a hiking club, it doesn't matter what it is. If you are going to allow people who want to subvert your organization to be major players in your organization, you are kissing your organization goodbye. Okay, enough on religion. Gramsci also understood that the family has to be the family is a key producer and transmitter of culture. It is a key center where cultural values are produced and reproduced and maintained, where transmission of cultural values from one generation to the next takes place, where people learn their core values about their country, about their approach to life, whether that's within religion or without. And so what do you see with BLM? We're going to disrupt the nuclear family. Of course we are. Of course they are. Of course. Because you have to disrupt the family, because the family is a rock-solid core of people you can always turn to. If the rest of the world turns its back on you, you should be able to turn to your family. You disrupt the family, people have nowhere to go. The only place left to go is the ideology, frankly, or the state that's enforcing that ideology. So he understood you have to disrupt the family. And we see the attacks on the family constantly. Nuclear family has to be dismantled. This is so common now that it's been in almost every major publication. He understood that we have to that one of the pillars of culture is media. So therefore,
so that's it. The attack on the family.
Yep. That's what we're seeing right now. We're watching this happen. I mean, an easy way to describe this is, if you break it down, they gotta take down culture, divide the people, destroy, everything, and then they take over. That's
Right.
This is a bunch of power-hungry elite who will destroy the world to create their own pseudo-reality. And it's evil. This is, you know, simply put, that's what this is.
Attacking the family, attacking the church. If you attack that, it's gone. It's gone.
Yes, that's why they infiltrated the churches. Now, you remember he uploaded this in January 2021. And at that time, SBC was saying, okay, we don't go along with this totally. So we'll just give it a different name. They're promoting the ideas behind it, though. Well, right now, they're open about going along with this, you know. And they're actually telling people, if you don't go along, you're out. They're dividing people in worship, you know, those who have had the vaccine, those who haven't, they're dividing them, church.
Right.
They're dividing people in society. You know, if you go into, you know, the workplace, it will get down to, do you have a vaccine? In fact, it's like that right now. You have over 100 people in a business. You know, you have to be vaccinated or test negative to work.
Right, right.
It's like that here.
Right.
And you know that from where you're at, how bad it is.
Absolutely.
You're in the same mindset state that I am. So, you know, we can see this because it's pushed hard here. And it's pushed hard where you're at. You know, at what point are you not going to be able to buy or sell without going along with the agenda? You see?
Yep.
It's so easy to see.
Absolutely. It's scary.
And if you don't, it is, because you remember the first horse, what does it do? It captures. The second horse takes peace away, and people kill one another. You know, that's how prophetic this is, the warning in Scripture. So what do we see happening? What do we see happening? Do we see control? Do we see people being captured? Absolutely, without any weapons. Easy. It was easy.
Yep.
What happens next? You take peace away. And what happens when you take peace away? People go after one another.
Right.
You can see that happening right now. It just, you know, the Lord lays this all out, people. I mean, you know, this is what I'm saying. Listen to me. It's all in the Word of God. It's just step by step,
right,
we can see it.
It's right in front of us.
Absolutely.
I mean, you would have to be Stevie Wonder not to see it. Right? It's you know, and the thing is, it's, you know, it's part of our, how would I say this? It's in the news every day. Every day this is in the news. Every day.
If people can't see, this is a forerunner for the Antichrist. You know, I don't know what else to say, you know, because we could just see this right before us. Oh, I can remember. I'm going to tell you a little story. You said that about Stevie Wonder, and this is awful. I got angry with my husband. Someone wanted to buy one of the work desks that we had pulled out of a job, you know, one time, and there were scratches right where the key was. And the lady buying it said, "What are all the scratches? You know, whose desk was this?" My husband said, "Stevie Wonder's." I said, "Shut up. Don't."
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, it just come right out of his mouth. The lady said,
"Right,
whose desk was this?" He said, "Stevie Wonder's." There were scratches all over where the keyhole was. Oh, you're going to get into trouble. You just need to shut up.
Especially in Motown. Especially in Motown.
Yeah, so when you said that, it reminded me of one of the dumb things my husband does. They always get him in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
No problem.
The ideology of Marxism has to subvert, infiltrate and subvert media production. Well, come on. Look at where we are, right? They've got media. There's luckily enough internet to where there's alt media that's thankfully saying something different. The problem is all of the resources that the major media have and all of the trust that they've built up over years takes a while. They have tons of stuff, and alt media has to compete against that. And so they look kooky, and in fact, they will say kooky things, and they will get things wrong more often because they don't have the same level of resources. They don't have the same level of built-up experience, institutional knowledge, and so on. But anyway, we clearly see that Gramsci's plan to infiltrate and subvert media has gone very successfully. Law is another producer of culture in Gramsci's view. Law has been very successfully infiltrated as well. Critical race theory arose in law. It arose out of critical legal theory, which was an early attempt at this project, by infusing it with race, because somewhere in the 1930s, if you listen to the testimony of Bella Dodd speaking to the House on American Activities Committee when she testified before Congress, somewhere in the 1930s, the communists realized that to infiltrate America, their weakness would be race. And so here you have Derrick Bell at Harvard Law cooking up critical race theory by infusing black liberation race ideology in a very paranoid way into critical legal studies, which aimed to show that the law was, in fact, creating oppression. That gets taken to the next level by Kimberly Crenshaw, his protege, studying under him. She is the other person credited with the creation of critical race theory. She's also the creator of intersectionality, which she adopted from earlier thought. The idea of intersectionality is that all oppression is linked. That's what this is all about. The Marxists believe that all society that's not Marxist is oppressive. You can read this again. I mentioned Horkheimer a minute ago in traditional critical theory. You can read it there. It's very clear. He's very explicit that you know, Marxism is science and that the scientific society is Marxist. And the same thing goes for any non-oppressive society has to be Marxist. It's very, very clear what they're talking about, and you saw even in Horkheimer the seeds of intersectionality. He says explicitly that the goal cannot be to pick apart one form of oppression or another. And in fact, it has to be all the forms of oppression at the same time. I actually have the quote here, I think. No, I don't have that quote, sorry. I have a few quotes from Horkheimer written down with my notes here, but not that one. But he says explicitly that the goal of critical theory cannot be to critique one aspect or one branch of problem in society. It has to do all of them because they are all interlinked. That was 1937. Kimberly Crenshaw writing this stuff down in 1989 for the first time is not all that creative. In fact, she kind of stole the idea from, the queer theorists were talking about it. Judith Butler was talking about it before that. For example, Gail Rubin was talking about it in the early 80s. The Combahee River Collective was talking about it in 1977. But anyway, critical race theory, what Kimberly Crenshaw was able to do was inject that line of thought explicitly and effectively into law. And it is now the basis of jurisprudence, even at the level of the Supreme Court. The case that was decided over the summer about sexual orientation and gender identity, or not sexual orientation, sorry, gender identity and maybe it was sexual orientation, relied upon an analysis that saw sex, sexuality, and gender as inextricably linked together. They depend on one another in a way that's generally close to intersectional. Kimberly Crenshaw, though, deliberately injected intersectional thought into law where it wasn't previously. And intersectional thought, of course, is this idea that all oppressions are interlinked, everything's super complex, better to tear the whole thing down. All the way back to Horkheimer in 37, Gramsci had the same vision. He knew that this is what had to happen. And then the last one that I've left out as a domain of cultural production is most important. It's education. Gramsci was a huge believer in the idea that we needed to have working-class intellectuals, that the working class had to be educated, but not just educated. They had to be educated into a class consciousness. If we borrow off of Horkheimer, Horkheimer was talking about how traditional theory is kind of like science and philosophy and logic and, you know, even psychology. But then you have this critical theory that's kind of infused in everything and is basically activism for his utopian dream. And he's really clear. He says even that the simple-minded are doing traditional theory all the time. In other words, common sense. They're thinking. They're working things out. They're using logic. They exist in reality instead of pseudo-reality. But you have to teach critical theory. He's implying that critical theory is somehow higher rather than garbage. What you're actually doing, what he's actually admitting without, I think, realizing it, is that you have to indoctrinate people into critical theory. And Gramsci understood that this needed to be done in education. It needed to be done in working-class education in particular. And so you have a direct line from Gramsci into Brazil, Paulo Freire, in the 1960s, writing The Pedagogy of the Oppressed.
Yeah. You see, this is why, again, they are in our universities. They are in our public school systems. They are teaching these little children, you know, second graders, third graders. They have these books on critical race theory, you know, being awoke. You know, it's everywhere in every facet now of education. Look, it's like the vaccine. They announced today that children from 5 to 11 now could get the vaccine. First they started with the seniors. Then they started working their way down, right? So now, what does a child, what does a 5-year-old child need the vaccine for? Somebody explain that to me. Why would a 5-year-old? And again, it has nothing to do. They just want to get everyone to have a herd mentality. Get as many, condition them to do what we tell them to do. Condition them to join us without question. And whatever it is that we would have them to do, the same thing happened with Jim Jones. He told those people, drink the Kool-Aid. That's why when the news people got there was 1,000 bodies on the ground.
Right.
Herd mentality.
That's right. Yes.
Same thing.
It is the same thing, exactly.
Indoctrination, right? Indoctrination.
Yes. Well, that intersectionality, you know, that's where they link everything together into one lump. That's the crossroads, you know? You get to the crossroads. Remember, we did something in the music of that. You're at the crossroads.
Right.
So they link everything together. That's the end of it. And if you look at Jim Jones, like you said, that's exactly what happened. They drank the Kool-Aid together. Very few. There were only a few that ran, that got out of there.
Right.
You know,
but the great,
a few
but the
people
great majority,
did get out.
The great majority
over
was
900.
Yeah.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
And give me more. And let me, you know, and give me more. Give me more Kool-Aid. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. Feed it to your kids. Remember?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
they give it to their children. So that's what this is doing.
Wow.
That's exactly. When you said a 5-year-old, you know, they're giving them the Kool-Aid. That, you know.
Sure.
Let's feed the Kool-Aid to our children.
My goodness. It's sad. It's sad. You know,
well,
why
the legal
God...
system is involved in this, too, because there's a lot of lawyers out there that are not all. There's people against us, trust me. But, there, you know, our legal system is on board with this, especially, you know, if you look at the LGBTQ community. You know, they were able to get status changed legally, protecting them against discrimination. So where we would you know, look at things that, yeah, you can't discriminate against that person. How did the LGBTQ community get legally, infiltrate our legal system to get themselves
right.
set as a minority or,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a description of, you know, someone that is discriminated against? How did they do that? Because I was worried about that when they classed themselves under, you know, the age, the race, you know, gender, yeah. You know, that was male and female at one time. But
right,
now it's
right.
LGBTQ. So
sure.
so they were, so when they were doing that drag queen story hour, they were legally protected against anyone. In fact, some governments like yours, your system there, funded it. They were
right.
they were able to do that with no one going after them or no one being able to express a legal opinion about it, because that then is discrimination. You see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything
yeah.
that promotes this is being labeled as discrimination. You're discriminating. And that's why they got that status. Well, you know, it's going, speaking again, you know, if you say other religions, and we have that, you have that in England. That's why Joel Osteen's okay to speak over there. Because if you
yeah.
say Jesus is the only way, you will not get on television over there. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
discrimination.
Yeah.
So you
right.
see where they're taking that.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Sure.
You won't be able to
sure.
speak and do a class.
Right.
Because that's discrimination. You know, they'll find
mm-hmm.
a way. I mean, YouTube does it right now, but they will find a way. You can say anything you want about evil, anything. You can
right.
cuss, swear, do anything you want. I see people on YouTube doing it all the time. But if you start saying anything about Jesus being the only way, forget it. You can get strikes for that. Or, you know, throttled, or all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are happening, especially like on YouTube, because it's popular. So they're finding other platforms to do this. But this is where it's leading, is what I'm saying. Discrimination,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we understood that for years. People understood what that meant. Now they're expanding that to include everything that fits their agenda. That's what it is. And it excludes Christ. That's what,
sure.
you know, and the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Right, 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 right.
Or, it, you know, it includes, I mean, that
yeah.
that will
yeah.
include that. You know, it will get to the point that you can't say anything against the agenda.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That's where we're headed with this.
Right, right. Right. Okay, here's more.
And basically wrecking the Brazilian education system, which still hasn't recovered as a result. And then Gramsci getting translated into English in 1970 and getting picked up by education activists like Michael Apple, eventually Henry Giroux, Ira Shore, and later Joe Kinchelow, some of these critical pedagogy guys that picked all this crap up. And their idea was that you had to use education to educate a first, earlier, class consciousness, then later, a critical consciousness. Critical consciousness would have been the way that Freire phrased it. So, and then that's become the main kind of thing. The modern word for critical consciousness, modern slang term, is woke. Being woke means you have a critical consciousness. Critical consciousness is the cultural Marxist reinvention of the idea of class consciousness, which is exactly the thing Marx was talking about. And so they understood that you had to educate the working class. In other words, you had to indoctrinate and reprogram in cult fashion the working class to create what they called what Gramsci referred to as working class intellectuals, so that they could express the proletarian view of oppression from within in an organic fashion. This is ultimately the basis for the Long March through the institutions, and the main institution of relevance is education. The whole point of their intrusion into education was going to be the need for consciousness raising. Of course, the feminists were also deeply tied up with Marxist thought all the way from the beginning. They weren't all Marxists, of course, but many of them were. So Marxist thought has always infiltrated this, and you've seen feminist consciousness or consciousness raising being a major project with them as well. That's the idea of Gramsci's belief that there needs to be a kind of so-called working class intellectual. You know, the working class intellectual has class consciousness or critical consciousness and then is teaching that critical consciousness. He's been awakened to the nature of his own oppression as somebody that's in the working class or later oppressed group, as it came to be known. I would say, by the way, just as an aside, that original Marxism was about economics, obviously. You had the working class versus the proletariat, working class versus the bourgeoisie capitalists. And it was just all economic class, so you're caring about a class consciousness. Then later we had a critical consciousness that was arising, and that was really this cultural Marxism. I mean, Gramsci is the birthplace of cultural Marxism. What he's describing is applying Marx's conflict theory and other aspects of Marx's analysis and even the Hegelian form that Marx based his thought on, the young Hegelian form, to these aspects of culture. But you hear what he's talking about. You don't hear race. You don't hear sex. You don't hear sexuality. You don't hear gender. You don't hear that stuff. You hear religion, family, education, media, law, high culture, later low culture. You hear Theodore Adorno talking a lot about high culture, low culture, and then mid or pop culture. And the belief that Adorno had deriving from these same lines of thought was that the mid culture or pop culture, and the postmodernists believe this too, were stealing away that resentment underneath the anger in the working class and keeping them satisfied. And so that they had to be, that basically pop culture had to be subverted to make people mad and to hate society rather than to have them be entertained. Sort of gross when you realize what they were doing. Okay, so there's a lot there, but this is basically the idea that Gramsci had. Is education is the main place where this is going to happen. So you have literally the most influential and the most damaging aspects of this have taken place. First in our colleges of teacher education, then our universities, then our K-12 schools, and at this point you see that all of those are basically captured, and all of those have to be taken back basically as quickly as possible by saying that no, teaching a critical consciousness, that's your cultural Marxist, I didn't finish that thought, I apologize, critical consciousness is not what we need to be doing. We need to be teaching people, as if we go back to Horkheimer's separation, traditional theory, we need to teach them how to be competent. We need to teach them how to think clearly. We need to teach them how not to hate their society and hate everything about it so that we can usher in some bogus utopia that exists only in pseudo-reality. Utopia literally means nowhere if you go to the Greek roots, but rather to understand things for real and to do real work around them. So we need traditional theorists, not critical theorists. So just to back up and finish that thought, you had Marx was pure economics, and so he had class consciousness. Gramsci is your cultural Marxist, and they had this idea of critical consciousness. And now we have this woke thing, and it's all based on identity politics. Identity politics, by the way, isn't what happened in the 1960s in the civil rights movement. The term identity politics was coined by that same Combahee River collective I just mentioned, which was radical lesbian black feminists, I'm not kidding, who got together. They were angry black lesbian women who were in the black liberationism, which is this whole thing. This is what this is. Liberationism is in essence what the cultural Marxism is about, liberation from all forms of oppression. I mean, Horkheimer uses the word explicitly in the essay I was talking about in the exact context where all the oppressions are linked. So I refer...
Yeah, this goes back to Satan, because Satan felt oppressed.
Yeah.
He felt that God, you know, had too many rules and so
yep.
Satan rebelled. Right?
That's
he
right.
rebelled.
Yep.
And he just wanted,
yep.
he, you know, but the thing is, Satan set up his kingdom, and he
mm-hmm.
Satan promises you riches, but in the end, you end up broke. It's the same thing with communism. Communism promises
yep.
you a utopia, but you wind up on a, you wind up on an inner tube in the sea, heading towards Miami. That's what happens.
Yeah. That's it.
So no,
that's it.
Yeah.
So
Satan
even BLM's idea here is, you know, when they came out and everybody thinks it's something new, it's not. You know, what he just exposed there, this has been in the works. You look at Gramsci here, he was writing about this stuff, you know.
Right, right.
Years ago. Alice Bailey, you can go back. And if you listen to some of the things she said, she talks about her brothers in the movement. We're going back,
right.
You know, so, and but like you said, it goes back to the very beginning, biblically. But
yeah,
we can see it throughout history. It's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun.
Nothing.
You.
Absolutely.
The thing that was,
all,
that is the thing that will be. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that all it wants to do is destroy what is good.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Because, look, look, America's not perfect. We know America's not perfect.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
Where can you go on this planet? Where? Where could you go? Experience with you. You know, the lady who just won lieutenant governor for Virginia, she has Jamaican citizenship,
mm-hmm.
right? She was born in Jamaica, came to the Bronx when she was 6 years old, graduated high school, went into the military. Think about it. She's not even first-generation American.
Right.
She just got here.
Mm-hmm.
She just got here. And now she's the lieutenant governor of Virginia. In what nation could you do that?
None.
And she's black.
Right.
And she's black. So
how
could LeBron James say she's oppressed? How could...
Yep.
Right? Or Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
How could he say she's oppressed? No. If you apply yourself, if you... And she said, I heard her testimony. She said, I went to law school. When I went to law school, all my kids were, you know, 5, 6, and 7. I mean,
mm-hmm.
who goes to law school
wow.
with 3 kids in elementary school?
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. What
who does that? Who does that?
Wow. That's a that's someone who really, really is out there trying to make it. I mean,
that's
you know,
it.
And did.
Right.
I mean,
and
wow.
trying to seize the opportunities that America affords.
Yes.
Right? So.
Yeah.
No, this is crazy. This is just
well, we do have
crazy.
An American gospel that's totally different. You know,
well,
I mean,
yeah, of course. It's
you know,
rubbish.
It's all
it's rubbish.
Yeah, when you think about the oppression and the things going on in other countries, we've been spoiled over here. We've
right.
really been spoiled, and I think. You know, why it's a shocker to so many people is because we've been spoiled. And now, you know, people have been going through this. Look at North Korea. Look at Russia. Look at China.
Mm-hmm.
They've lived this their whole life.
Right.
You
right.
know, this was they were born into this. Now it's coming here and we're shocked. No. I mean, it's because it was a land of opportunity. You know,
mm-hmm.
and
sure.
that is against this agenda, totally. So they got to take it down. And guess what? As long as they can get people to go along with it, it'll happen.
Right.
And I think,
sure.
that, of course, biblically, we know it will happen. But
yeah.
what slows
Look.
It down?
Look.
You know, the Lord does. He does.
Right.
You know, everything depends on what he allows. But I got to say something. If you're a logical thinker, that helps a lot for you to understand this is no good. You have to think logically in these times about what's
Look,
really going on.
You have to use your coconut. You have to use your brain. because you cannot think like the herd.
That's right.
You can't think like the herd. Right? You have to say to yourself, wait a minute. I gotta analyze what you're telling me. I gotta think about what you're telling me. I just can't do something because it's like the preachers in the church. I hear the Lord saying, the Holy Spirit is saying, so $99.99. Okay, Mr. Preacher. You and your so-called Holy Spirit, you guys can hang out together. That doesn't jive with my brain. You see?
That's right.
So I have to say to him, no, you and the Holy Spirit and your pseudo-herd, you when I see you sold the $99.99, and when I see the Holy Spirit sold the, you know, and of course I'm talking about his Holy Spirit, not the real Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
When I see your Holy Spirit sold $99.99, then I'll sell $99. Until then, no good.
Right.
See, you have to think. You can't let these people bamboozle you. You can't.
Well, think about it. I mean, they've been doing it for years in the church because how many times, you know, have people not sat down and considered, you know, why does he need a building fund if he's telling you that the Lord gives you, you know, a triple fold on your return if you give, then why doesn't he just give and get triple fold himself so he can build the building he wants, you know?
Right.
I mean, why does he need you to do that? And he has all the faith that you're going to him, you know.
Right. Well, look.
And he's
asking you.
I mean, it makes no sense.
These people say, I went to heaven and I saw the streets of gold. And God told me to go back to earth and preach his word. Okay, wait a minute. Hold up. You were already in heaven and you saw all that gold. And you know that gold is almost $2,000 an ounce. And you didn't ask God to give you a couple of ounces of gold, so when you came down here, you didn't have to pester me.
Yeah.
You didn't have to bother me.
Yeah.
You saw all that gold up there? You saw all that gold?
Right.
And you come down here empty? And you want me to give you money? No.
Right.
Go back up there. In fact, because they're always going up there, they're always talking to them. Go back up there, and when you go back up there, ask him for the money.
Yeah, we want receipts.
Ask him. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No,
oh,
you see, we have to think. We have to honestly think. We can't allow ourselves to be scammed.
That's
right. We just can't.
This is, you know, if Satan cannot overcome the church, and he won't, because we know the real church, the gates of hell will not prevail against it, you know. We know that.
Right.
But you know, he can eliminate believers physically in that process. You know, he can do that, but he's not going to overcome them. However, the physical church, this is what they're trying to destroy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this
sure.
is exactly, you know, what they're trying to destroy. Totally. And
right.
we're in their way. Morals, values, you know, love, that's against this agenda. They're using the term love. Totally different.
Oh,
when
I know
you love
that.
The people who love the agenda.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
if you
right.
you love someone who's in the agenda, you buddy and partner with them. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. It really is.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know,
well, we're just about out of time.
Yes.
Anything else you want to add before we say good afternoon to our brothers and sisters in Christ Jesus?
Well, I would just say, you know, the Bible does not mandate any of us to conquer the world through pillars, you know?
Right.
But Marxism does. So, you know, this is what we have to keep in mind. And we know the harlot, it's a harlot who sits on seven mountains. Think about it.
Yeah.
I think it has a twofold meaning here with all the seven mountain stuff. So, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. I would say we'll finish it. Where did we end? I want to ask you that.
We stopped it at the 37-minute mark. 37 minutes.
I'll have to add something to it then, probably.
Yeah.
Which is
and
easy with this. It's everywhere.
Yeah, maybe we can go back a little bit and pick it up. We can push it back to like the 30 minute mark and bring
okay.
it back and then pick it up from there. And because I got to tell you, this guy is deep. He's
yeah.
deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when he talks about because unlike Virgil and the other guy, I forget his name.
Daryl.
This guy, yeah, Daryl. This guy's talking to you like if you sat in a class on Marxism.
Mm-hmm.
See,
mm-hmm.
he's just talking like if you know what he's talking about. And some of us need
yeah.
to take a refresher course. Daryl and what's his name?
Yeah.
They break it down a little bit more. They
right.
they make it, you know, this guy's talking
yeah.
high school. I need second grade. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I need to brush
yeah.
up on, and I'm just being honest, me personally, I need to brush up on some of the things that he's talking about because I did study it, but how can you remember everything? You can't remember everything.
Right.
There's too much to remember.
Right?
Right? And I mean,
thank
God.
I think
God,
there's a lot that we can see, though. What he's saying is we can see right in front of us.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we
absolutely.
Can see it. And so, you know.
Right. And I'm glad, I'm glad you gave us a refresher course on what Alice Bailey said because I forgot what she said, right? I mean,
yeah.
I know we did some shows on her, but in the beginning you gave us the 10-point, right, what
yeah.
Alice Bailey said. I'm glad you gave us that because if you were to give me a quiz right now and say, what did Alice Bailey say, I would have that dumb look on my face like, wait a minute. I know I took the class, but I forgot,
yeah.
right?
There's
a lot
going on, yeah.
So that no, I mean, we've done shows on this subject, but
mm-hmm.
because it's not part of our daily vernacular, since we're not talking about it all the time, you gotta. But this guy, he's on the money.
He knows what he's talking
dude.
About. Trust me.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he's a very
sharp
dude. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I said,
yeah.
he's not a Christian, and that's too bad, but he has helped the churches try to stay away from them.
Yeah, because,
you
listen,
know, Southern Baptist.
Smart always helps stupid. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Smart always helps stupid. So,
yeah.
you know. All right, my sister, you have the last word.
Well, I would say have a great week, saints, and we'll go back to this Tuesday. And thank you very much for listening. Have a great day. Talk to you later. Bye.
They will make it all a place of spring. Thank you.